Chapter 3. Methods of Suiciding. Life is cheap in prison. Killing a high-profile sex offender like Epstein is a means to advance convict status. Having spent almost 6 years in the Arizona State Prison System for ecstasy trafficking, I met people prepared to kill for as little as $50 worth of heroin. With most of the inmate population addicted to hard drugs, there are always desperate people willing to do anything to get their next fix. Guards have the ability and the knowledge to kill prisoners and get away with it. They are ideally placed to frustrate investigations and to coordinate cover-ups. Being on the front line for little pay, some guards succumb to the temptation to supplement their incomes by facilitating or participating in hits. In Mexico and Colombia, the cartels have so much money that they can often pay to have prisoners eliminated. Sometimes the guards perform the hits directly. Otherwise, the guards fall asleep or move a prisoner to an area where enemies are waiting. Epstein was in the federal, not the state, prison system. The feds have got more money and their prisoners are supposed to be better protected. To suicide someone in any prison system in America, it's got to look like an actual suicide. Epstein's assassins must have considered the various ways prisoners commit suicide and mimicked one of those ways. In the Arizona system, I became aware of 6 methods of prisoner suicide, including hanging. New prisoner arrivals are given certain items known as property, including a towel, clothes, a skinny mattress, a sheet, and maybe a blanket. Ripped sheets can be converted into rope. Cell ceilings have no fixtures to hang anything from. The highest point to attach a rope would be the top bunk. The cells I experienced were originally designed for one person, but over the years, additional bunks were added until there was a maximum of 3 bunks. If the rope is attached to the top bunk, depending upon the height of the prisoner, his feet may still be on the floor. You may be wondering, how can someone hang himself from a bunk if there's not enough room and his feet are touching the ground? For expertise on this subject, I interviewed Neil Samworth, who for 11 years worked at HM Prison Manchester and published a book called Strange Ways, A Prison Officer's Story. He gave a horrific account of finding the corpse of a prisoner who had hung himself, but his feet weren't off the ground. The deceased had tied the rope and leaned forward. They found the corpse at an angle and determined that the force of his neck had choked him to death. Among the various methods of hanging, some prisoners put the rope down the toilet, flush it until it's anchored, and then use the leverage to lean away from it. I interviewed Michael Mazie, who wrote the book Young Offender, My Life from Armed Robber to Local Hero. Michael described a hanging suicide method whereby the prisoner rolls sideways off his bunk, and by the time he hits the floor, his neck has already snapped. Murder in prison can easily be disguised as a suicide. After my documentary was broadcast on the National Geographic Channel as an episode of Locked Up Abroad, called Banged Up Abroad in the UK, titled Raving Arizona, I was contacted by a viewer. Dear Sean, I just watched your story on 4/23/13. A little about me. I have 4 brothers that did time. My older brother's name is James T. Larkin. The cops killed him. They said he hung himself with a pair of blue jeans that was brand new. It happened at the 26th Police District in Philadelphia, PA. A friend of his was in the jail when they brought him in. He was lifeless. Nothing was done to the cop that killed him. That was in 1976. My older brother, Michael Kevin Larkin, hung himself in Great Ford Prison in Penn. Feeling a little down. Talk later. The hotshot method is favoured by gangs, such as the Aryan Brotherhood. In Arizona State Prison, the majority are injecting drugs, mostly heroin and crystal meth. The widespread drug usage is no secret to the guards, who use the threat of a urine test to keep the prisoners from misbehaving. If a corpse is found with a needle at the scene, there is an immediate assumption that the deceased has overdosed. The paperwork will document the death as an accident, or maybe even suicide. Such a conclusion minimizes the amount of paperwork to be filled by the staff versus the work required if there were a murder investigation. So the staff members are incentivized not to explore any options other than suicide. I interviewed ex-cop Neil Woods, author of Drug Wars, The Terrifying Inside Story of Britain's Drug Trade. Neil described how drug gangs in Brighton terrorised the lowest-level street people by inflicting hot shots on any they suspected of becoming police informants. This caused a record amount of accidental overdoses to be reported. Emergency responders, finding a needle and drugs at the scene, naturally assumed that the deaths were accidental, or maybe suicides. The anomaly was only discovered by comparing the numbers over time and in other cities. Another method of suicide in prison is by jumping from a height. Prisoners are often housed in tiers on multiple stories. When they emerge from their cells, there are upper tier railings blocking a steep drop into the day room. This particularly brutal method doesn't always end in death. Some drop, hit a table or the floor, and remain alive with a broken leg or snapped spine. There is a method called suicide by cop or suicide by guard. Prior to coming to Arizona prison, a friend I made in prison became depressed after his girlfriend died from lung cancer. He decided to commit suicide by cop. Attempting to rob his own bank, he waited in line, went to a familiar teller, extracted a note that said he had a gun, and demanded cash. Outside, he waited for the police to arrive, so that he could go down in a hail of bullets. 30 minutes later, they calmly showed up and asked him why he had stolen less money than his own balance at the bank. After getting arrested, he was told that the only way they might have shot him dead were if he had a hostage. One day, I was in my cell reading on my bunk when a prisoner with a neckerchief tied around his face dashed past, wielding a lengthy homemade knife. After running around yelling, the guards coaxed him to a fence. On the other side of the fence, a SWAT team arrived with live ammunition. He was told to drop the shank. After refusing, he was told they were going to count down from 10 to 0, and if he had not dropped the shank by 0, they were going to shoot him dead. Observing from my cell with the heart rate elevated, I prayed he would drop the weapon, which he did during the countdown. Overdosing on pills is another method. The prison system is one of the biggest customers for the pharmaceutical companies. Nurses perform pill calls throughout the day. Many of the prisoners pretend to swallow the pills while hiding them in their mouths so that they can be illegally traded. Suicidal prisoners stockpile the pills until they think they have enough to kill themselves. The next method his wrist slashing. Every 30 minutes or so, a guard does a security walk. He, the guards are mostly male, comes into the building and walks around. If the inmates are locked down, he looks into each cell to ensure they are still alive. Due to the time it takes to bleed out, a suicidal prisoner would have to do it immediately after a guard does a security walk. In my second year in the Maricopa County Jail, when the prosecutor said that I was facing a maximum 200-year sentence, I became suicidal. With cockroaches crawling over my skin at night, I couldn't sleep. A condition aggravated by the itchiness from heat-induced skin infections and bed sores. After the prosecutor stopped my girlfriend from visiting the jail, I became depressed and planned to slash my wrists. Looking at the photos of my mum, girlfriend, and sister prevented me from attempting suicide. I couldn't bear the thought of my mum getting a call saying that her son had killed himself in a foreign jail. Cutting and wrist slashing happen more in prison than in the outside world. Some inmates even eat razor blades or employ methods such as drinking bleach. Before my release from prison in December of 2007, I sometimes sat in the chow hall with Grim, a bald-headed giant with tattoos on his skull. After my release, he and a group of accomplices tried to kill someone over a drug debt. They poisoned his hooch, but he didn't die. They injected him with a hot shot, but he didn't die. They ended up successfully hanging him in his cell from the top bunk. The guards grew suspicious and reviewed the security camera footage, which showed the co-conspirators leaving the cell with the deceased's property. TV, clothes, etc. After my release, a friend who was serving multiple life sentences became so sick from cancer that he wanted to die. He injected a hot shot, but because he had been on opiates for so long, his tolerance was so high that he didn't die. In the context of my experience, the official version of Epstein's death seems farcical. Guards are constantly doing headcounts and security checks. As Epstein was so high profile, the staff should have been extra vigilant and aware that their careers were on the line if something were to happen during their shift. For them to do the opposite, to fall asleep and do online shopping and leave Epstein unchecked for hours, suggests that they were ordered or compensated in some way. Most murderers follow certain rules, including no witnesses, no crime. With Epstein's cellmate removed, the guards conveniently oblivious, and the security cameras malfunctioning, conditions were perfect for homicide. When a government agency such as the CIA commits a murder, it will often employ the rule of investigating itself, with a desired outcome in mind. The authorities will put someone in charge of the investigation who will announce whatever they want the people to hear. "We will get to the bottom of what happened, and there will be accountability," Attorney General William Barr said. A third rule is to have four guys. In Epstein's case, the guards. Blame was immediately apportioned to them for not performing a check on Epstein every 30 minutes and for making false entries in the logbook. According to a jail employee, one of the sleepy guards was a former correctional officer whose new position did not include guarding inmates. He had volunteered to resume his former job for overtime pay. The second sleepy guard had been assigned to Epstein's wing, because the MCC was short-staffed. The Justice Department announced that the MCC's warden, Lamine Ndeya, would be transferred to a Bureau of Prisons office in Philadelphia, while the FBI and the Justice Department's Inspector General conducted inquiries. Prison staff union leaders criticized Bill Barr's decision to allow the MCC's boss to keep working while two staff members were put on leave. "It makes me angry that they reassigned the warden," said Jose Royas, a prison employees union official and a teacher at the Coleman Prison Complex in Sumterville, Florida. "They didn't put him on administrative leave like the others. The warden made the call to take Epstein off suicide watch and to remove his cellmate. That is egregious." Of course, the Fall Guys were sacrificed, while the warden was allowed to remain to keep the cover-up going and to tie up any loose ends. The fourth rule is to have the mainstream media repeatedly publish a false narrative. Prison staff discovered Epstein dead in his cell at Metropolitan Correctional Center at 6:30 a.m. on Saturday, an official said. He had apparently hanged himself with a bedsheet, likely fastening the sheet to a top bunk and pitching himself forward, law enforcement and prison officials said. The suicide fit a pattern of behavior already reported by the media, who had claimed that the previous injuries Epstein had sustained had arisen from a failed suicide attempt, a version of events disputed by Epstein's lawyers. In Epstein's case, all the rules were followed, implying that powerful people had wanted him dead. Who were they? And what had the paedophile done to get on the wrong side of them? To begin answering those questions, we need to look at Epstein's past.